It's nice to see all of you. Thank you for being here. You're probably wondering why I've gathered you all today in this wonderful room. There's an affinity and there's an agenda. I'm going to use the chair's prerogative to steal a few minutes of our time at the beginning of this meeting, so what I'm going to do, to kind of explain or refresh old senators and explain to new senators some of how the body operates and sort of how the rules work. I wrote these down in my to-do notebook, which the front row can see is a building map, and I meant to talk to them, so I have to square very closely. But I wanted to talk to you about some general policies that we use to conduct business, explain a little bit about voting. There's some questions about what counts as a vote, what are we doing here, how things are going, and to talk some about the timing of issues and how, like, basically, what are we doing here? Why are we here? What do we do? How do things go? So, again, some of this will be familiar to those of you who have been in the Senate for a while, and some of these things will be new. First off, to say the magic number in the Senate is 31. We have a body of 60 senators. There are 40 faculty, and 6-7 years ago, we had an adjunct faculty member we were added, and 20 students. The faculty are elected from state departments, so that happens in spring usually, and the students have a separate election process that happens. To even begin a meeting, they have what's called a quorum is half plus one. So if there's 60 people, and 31 people to show up. If you have any idea for any change you want to affect at the college, you want to bring anything to the Senate, you need to get 30 other people to agree with you. At the minimum. Right, so the starting meeting is 31, to get up to 60, so the votes can go dicey if everyone shows up, and at the top, but that's the magic number. When we talk about the agenda in a second, but I want to say, if you have any questions, issues, anything you ever want to raise or bring, if there are more or less appropriate times to do so, but what we're always going to do is use the two microphones that are on either aisle. This is for accessibility purposes, and also because we're governed by New York State's open meetings law, so we do record these meetings. It also helps chat and see our administrative assistant to get our meetings together. So if you ever have anything to say, please, one, don't be shy about asking a question or for clarification or if you don't understand what's going on. But just introduce yourself, say your first name and your affiliations. I'm versed in English, and I would like to move such and such and such and such. I mentioned open meetings, so yes, our meetings are open. As senators, we hope that perhaps we can attend, but also any of your colleagues, any of your fellow students, any business, particularly you think it would be interesting if they just want to come and see what's happening. Literally anyone is allowed to come to these meetings, they're open to all, so I would encourage you to invite other people. This is a good thing and a bad thing, but I think coming is a good thing because everything we discuss is open and is meant to be the most accessible possible. Okay, business. So, we always meet on a Thursday. On Monday, you should receive an email, unless I forget to respond to that, with our agenda and the meeting materials. You see our agenda here. It's going to look the same all year long. Kind of template that we get. Great. Some of this business might seem sort of pro forma, and sometimes the attachments get pretty long. The main thing that you'll see in our Senate agenda material that goes out on Monday are going to be reports from the undergraduate curriculum committee and the graduate curriculum committee. Those are going to be all of the course changes, the difference of minors, you need this number to be back, you want to retitle the course curriculum, you want to add a major, become a school, all of that kind of stuff. And what you might be inclined to think, I don't really, not a tennis player, I don't have things to do, that sounds great, or music and whatever you want to teach, that's fine. It's extremely helpful to us if you were to still look at all of the material. Obviously, you're going to pay attention to things that are relevant to your interest in this. If you look at everything, it's going to help us today, later on, to the little corrections we need to make this small, that we all let us look in the last session. So, those go out on Monday. Pathway is available if you have all your questions or concerns. I wanted to say, too, that a word of the comment. So I mentioned the undergraduate curriculum committee and the graduate curriculum committee. So a lot of the business that happens in this kind of goes through committees first. There are, there will be times where ideas, motions are brought to the Senate on the day. You come to the meeting, you know we're going to discuss this and talk in a while. Most of it will try to send to a committee first. 2 weeks before, the Senate meeting, the executive committee of the Senate meets. That's the committee responsible for establishing the agenda, and they also can go with any other kind of questions or think about how you might want to handle certain situations that arise. And you guys meet on Thursday, do you know? The UCC meet on Thursday? Okay, so the UCC, and I believe the UCC, they meet a month. The business that they brought today, they discussed a month ago. So if you're a faculty member wanting to propose a course or have a change or something like that, just to be aware of the timing, you need to have that in at least a month before the Senate ever going to consider it. And then after the Senate considers it, if you approve it, then it has to go through the Supreme Court steps. So things can take a while. There are things that can happen the day of, but a lot of these things will happen kind of more slowly. So the UCC, which General Affairs and the recruiting committee, the sustaining committees that we would expect, there's also a nominating committee report. Those are always going to appear in either number 5 here. And those, again, would be the bulk of them. I think the last thing I wanted to say... there's two more things I really could say. A word about voting. You'll most likely hear some words later today. I move this, that, and the other, and I ask for unanimous consent. Everything that we do here is done by motion. Someone makes a motion. There are emails that are there, it's over time, they move something. If you don't think it's a controversial motion, or you think that people have a different time to look at it, you can ask for unanimous consent. At that point, I look around, and if anyone is kind of like coming or hawing, or walking to the mic, looking at a bigger question, or what was it, I really just consider that. Otherwise, that's considered passed, so it can happen pretty quickly. If we do need to take a vote, a motion is made, we'll need a second, so someone else has to agree with you. If there's some debate, if anyone has a problem, we'll discuss it, I'm not sure about that, what do you think about this, then we'll have an actual vote, we'll use these voting cards. And so, and we need how many people to agree with you? 31, or the other ones I missed it. I've never said it. 31 people to agree with you. So, what I wanted to say was most of the business will be, I would expect the unanimous consent. We like to deal with our problems ahead of time. And it can kind of go kind of quickly. But I also want to encourage all of you to be as involved and inquisitive and et cetera as possible when motions arise. I've had a number of times out here that people came up to me and said, I didn't know how to vote for anything, and that was really quick, or wait, didn't you have the time to talk? So at any point, you feel that you have a question or want to be involved, please don't be shy. I'm a fast talker, but I want to go nice and slow and make sure we're all on the same page to make sure we achieve our business appropriately. The last thing to say, as I mentioned, the UCC and the DCC, we have a lot of standing committees and special committees. The Senate also has the power to create ad hoc committees, as it's decided. I didn't get my stuff together today to do this, but I know we have a few vacancies, so I'll probably appeal to you at our next meeting to consider running for one of our standing committees, if that seems appropriate. People always come to me with a concern, and so we actually literally have a committee that goes to get on this committee and have a little bit more power to stand in to meet with people and get a little bit more dialogue and make a motion. So the body can be as active or involved as all of it. My job here is to keep things going and make sure they recognize and pay attention to everyone's ability to make that change. I don't know if I can say this for next week. I just want to say how much I love the Adrian for parliamentarian. So happy that he's here. Meanwhile, it has taken me 3 years to be able to feel that I could save most of that. I don't think off the clock because it's on my notes, but Jay will be whispering in my ear and always hear it and guide us in the right way. So thank you, Jay. Okay, so first of all, what all we do is approve the agenda. This would be the time if you wanted to add anything to the agenda. Usually that would go under new business, things that came up. So I will take the liberty of making a motion to approve the agenda. And because all motions take a second, I'll ask for a second. There's a second. Now, does anyone want to add anything to the agenda? Is there any changes? Okay, I don't see anything, so I will consider this unanimous consent. The agenda is approved. Next, we're going to approve our Senate meeting minutes of May 9th. So this would be a little bit clerical, but we just want to make sure that we got everything written down properly and represented correctly. So again, I would go ahead and take the liberty of making a motion to approve our meeting minutes of May, the last time, and ask for unanimous consent. Is there any objection or any changes to those minutes? Okay, then we'll consider those approved. And then we'll move on to the third agenda item, announcements, administrative reports, and memorials. We've invited a special guest and from Provost Patricia Price. So I'd like to begin by welcoming her to the podium. We'll pull up the website, and then I'll ask you if you have other announcements to come.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the new academic year. Good to see you. Thank you for being here. It is wonderful to see our faculty and our students engaging in shared governance. This is a sign of institutional health, and I really appreciate your efforts and your feedback and your commitment to Queen's College. I'm Patricia Price. I'm an interim provost. I'm going into my third year here at Queen's College, and so I feel like I've been around the block. This is my third time around the block, and as a cultural geographer, I know that it's about three cycles until something becomes kind of familiar, and so I feel less insecure this fall than I did the last two. And this really is an awesome place. I'm just so happy to be here. This is a great institution. We have these wonderful faculty and students. My specific as an author. Thank you. I wanted to give you a sense of what we have going on going into this academic year and what some of the projects in the Office of the Provost are. So I'll talk about four different things in a minute. There's time. Kevin will tell me. We can take questions. First and foremost, an ongoing process that I spoke to this body about last year, and I'll speak again about it next year because it's a multi-year process. I do have the website up here, so I do want to encourage any of you who are interested in getting more information about any of the things that I'm talking about. This is tabs are called initiatives, and that's a good place to find more information on any of these processes. And I wanted to start off by talking about middle space. Middle states are creditors. We used to call them regional creditors. We don't call them regional creditors anymore, although there are several crediting bodies around the country, and we fall under the Middle States Commission on Higher Education, colloquially referred to as Middle States. As you know, Queen's College is an accredited institution of higher education, which means that we can receive federal financial aid under Title IV. And the credits and the degrees that these students earn here are valuable. They transfer them to other institutions, and people will recognize a degree from Queen's College as a quality degree. So our accreditation is important. Most institutions of higher ed in the U.S. are accredited by a recognized accrediting body. Some aren't, but it's very few. And the accreditation cycle is something that happens periodically. So every 8 years, we are accredited by, we are visited by our accrediting body, Middle States. So the process to prepare for this takes a while, and it takes a village. So our community is heavily engaged in this work. The sort of the signature thing that the college produces as we go into our site visit by our peer evaluators is a self-study where we look at how well we meet the standards for accreditation. So Middle States has 7 standards for accreditation. We have to demonstrate that we meet. And we gather in evidence to prepare that self-study report, and analyzing that evidence and writing it up into 100 pages or less self-study really does take several years and a lot of people. And I recognize so many people in this room on the faculty and staff side who are involved in working groups of the self-study. Thank you for your service to our college for being engaged in reaccreditation. And this December, those of you who are students will receive outreach from the Executive Steering Committee of the working groups. And we will ask if you are interested in participating in the spring on one of the working groups to help us write the self-study report. So it's an opportunity for you to be engaged and to get a sense of how an institution is large and complex functions. So getting accredited is important, but at least as important as checking that box is coming together as a community and learning more about this institution, who we are, and how we conduct our work, how we're positioning ourselves for the future. So I encourage you to take a look at this website, which is very comprehensive, to get a sense of what all of this entails. We even have a suite of pictures. A video, which I showed you guys last year. And we have all sorts of updates about what's going on in the self-study process. So in May, for example, this is our Vice President, Maria Dawn from Middle State. She visited our campus. I know a couple of these students and faculty were involved in this visit. And she was here just to get a sense of who we are as a community, what our campus looks like, what our students are like. We talked with a lot of students from who we here and talked with our working groups. That links about what the expectations of the commission are for our self-study process and for the report that we produce. So that was the first of several visits by officials from Middle States, and we will keep you posted about other significant milestones coming up in this process. But as you might imagine, this takes a lot of my personal focus and attention as provost. The provost typically leads this process, and so when I tell you about what we've got going on this year, this is number one on the list for reaccreditation. Important part of the reaccreditation, I'm going to get back to the homepage here, is documenting that we're doing the things that we tell our students we're doing. And in order to do that, we have to provide data and evidence to demonstrate that we're actually doing things we tell you to do. And in order to do that, we have to engage in a regular process in the academic department, as well as the support units at the institution that are not academic. We have to engage in a regular process of planning and assessment and reporting, which I know you're thinking, well, particularly your life sounds so glamorous. It's really not, but fellows are kind of dorky that way. You love this stuff. So building the structures to plan and assess and report to all sorts of stakeholders, whether those are internal, whether those are over at the student central offices, whether those are to the creditor or to the state of New York or to the federal government, we have to have a process in place. By which we gather and analyze and report data on our institution. So I've been involved with a lot of different institutions of higher education, mostly as a peer evaluator from Middle State. I'm one of the people that goes around to visit campuses and help them with their reaccreditation. And since the pandemic, we did a couple of reaccreditation visits during the pandemic and one since. All of the institutions that I've been aware of and that I've engaged with deeply have struggled with keeping that regular process. I think the regular process of anything has really kind of gone by the wayside during the pandemic, as we all noticed in our personal lives and in our institutional lives as well. So it was tough during the pandemic years to keep up with the regular expected business. We were focused on getting students educated and, for many of us, just keeping healthy and making sure that our families and our communities were okay. So what we're facing as an institution is not unique to King's College. We've had a situation of our regular structures of planning and assessment kind of falling by the wayside during the pandemic. And so we're engaged as a community in rebuilding the structures that we do engage in this glamorous work of planning, assessment, and reporting. So I'm going to take you to a different place of the website. Under view closing system. And click on annual reporting. This is for the departments, although we'll be doing assessment and reporting for non-academic units as well. So there are some departments at the college that have admirably continued with their periodic program reviews every 7 years or so. An academic program produces a self-study based on reflection and analysis of their data, and has evaluators come in from outside and give them some input, and then they think about the next 7 years. We had kind of fallen apart during the pandemic, although some departments continued to conduct regular assessment, either because they were accredited by different bodies, separate bodies for their discipline, or because they had just adopted it as part of their culture. There are a lot of departments at the college that stopped doing this work, and so rebuilding the structures for the departments to engage in this regular program review process to ensure the quality of the education they're providing is something we've been really deeply involved in and will continue to be very deeply involved in. So we've been very busy, and I have to really thank Rebecca Saddle, who is our new Associate Provost for Institutional Effectiveness, and Chris Canusa, who is our faculty liaison for evaluation and assessment. They have really worked very hard to bring this back online. And so we have, I think, much clearer and more transparent year-by-year expectations and support for departments, what they need to be doing every year leading up to their own program review. We have a chart, I know this is really small, but these are all the departments at the college, and this is scheduled out to 2038, telling you where you are in your program review process, and so this should be a help for department chairs and others. And also the resources for department chairs to do their reporting and do their sort of reflection on assessment and how they're using assessment data to really improve student learning and the student experience and the success of the faculty in their department. So again, some of you are going to find this really interesting, and for those of you who do, I really encourage you to take a look at some of the resources that we're building in this space. It's not just the academic departments that are doing this work, but also working with non-academic support units, places like Buildings and Grounds, IT, HR, all of the different offices around the campus need to be engaging in work like this too. So we held, 2 weeks ago, we held an assessment workshop for all of these non-academic units, and another day we did it for the academic units, where we brought in a professional from James Madison University to help us learn how to conduct solid assessments. So we really are trying to provide as many supports as possible. And the last thing I'll say about this is that, you know, it's really, and that's what I do at department chairs then, it's really, it causes a lot of trepidation for department chairs to be going into this world of assessment, particularly if you don't have a background as somebody who engages in statistics and assessment and such things regularly as a scholar. We are in the process of, and I'm sending these letters out tomorrow, actually, identifying assessment coordinators for each of the academic schools to serve as folks who help the department chairs in the deans conduct this assessment work. So lots of cool things going on in this space. And I encourage you to find out more about this. I'm going to put back to the initiatives. The third thing that I want to talk to you about is the faculty satisfaction survey. Another big piece of business that Associate Provost Maria de Longoria, who's sitting here to talk to you, has really taken the lead on. You'll recognize these faculty members in the image here. So every 4 years or so, we participate in what's called the COACH survey. And the COACH is an acronym, stands for, if you haven't remembered this, Coalition on Academic Careers in Higher Education. It is a workplace satisfaction survey that is administered to faculty. And it's a very detailed instrument. And it gives us a snapshot of how the faculty feel on a number of issues and provides administration with a set of action items that we can carry forward to improve this as a workplace. And I want you to know that I take this very seriously. I took the report and so we're going to take this a little bit further. We did post the report, and any of you who are faculty can actually read what the COACH survey data said about faculty satisfaction. But I also asked a group of faculty to provide with you with a report that would have in it action items for not just me, but for all of us to be focusing on over the next 4 years. And I'd ask Associate Provost De Longoria to put together an implementation oversight committee for this year to make sure that we make good on what we say we're going to do to help address some of the issues surfaced in this workplace satisfaction survey. So, if you want to read the final report, I encourage you to do so. It's really an insight into life on the faculty here now at Queen's College. And one of the things that I want to point out about this is that the district did such a great job, and again, I really have to credit Associate Provost De Longoria and Espinosa with their partnership with the group, because they surfaced not just action items for the administration, which is really common here. It's like, oh, here's the things that we're unhappy about, administration, do something about it. But it really recognizes, this report really recognizes that we all have some skin in this game, and so there are some suggested actions for the administration, but also for the support offices, for CUNY Central, for college CMU, the chairs, for the academic schools, for the departments, for individuals, faculty, and for the strategic planning committee. So it's kind of interesting to see what's on people's minds and what this committee recommends we do about it. I know already that I don't have the staffing and budget to do everything on this list, but this implementation oversight committee can help guide our limited resources to address the things that can really make a difference here over the next 2 years at this point until our next year. And then finally, that's an awesome. Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Natalia. Thank you, Maria. I kept nagging them. Please put something up on the website. When I became an administrator, one of my mentors said, you always have to have a passion project. You're going to be asked to do all these compliance things, all the glamour stuff that I always talked about, like the satisfaction survey and assessment and reaccreditation. You have to have something you're really passionate about and make sure that you make time to carry it out for it as well. And given my academic trajectory where, I was at Baruch for quite a while, but then before that I was at a community college. I was at Dublin Community College. I think that the transfer relationship, how many of your students are transfers? Excellent, thank you. Thank you for choosing Queen's College. It's pretty representative in terms of the proportion of students who raise their hands. We have a lot of transfer students. And a lot of times, our transfers come to us from other institutions. I was at Dartmouth, that's a tiny little institution. The students would transfer to a place like Queen's College and feel really lost. Students often do not have the same kinds of supports that you have at your community college. And coming to a place this big and this complex can really cause what we call transfer shock for a lot of students. It's a real culture shock when coming to our institution. So I think we need to do a better job as an institution of making this a welcoming place for our transfer students and ensuring that the credits that you bring with you from your home institution, from your community college, to the extent possible, transfer to Queen's College, and not just as unspecified electives, but as credits in a major. And that this place supports all of our students. So I encourage you to take a look at the Better Neighbors Initiative. This is the name that we gave to our relationship with our two largest feeder schools. Those schools are Queensborough Community College and LaGuardia Community College. They provide the majority of our transfer students. One of the things that's important to know is that we used to have about 60% of our students transfers. At this point in time, about 35% of our students are transfers. That number has dropped precipitously. And so one of the questions I have to ask as provost is, where can we be better with our transfers? We were talking about enrollment. You've heard this all last year. You'll hear it all again this year. How can we get our enrollment up? Well, one big piece that we need to look at is our transfer students. How can we do better by our transfer students and make sure that they feel welcome and successful here? It's going to be a big part of our equation. So we are getting together regularly with the provost of LaGuardia and at Kingsborough, and we are talking about known hurdles for our students and resolving these. We are also gathering data on students from these two schools so that our faculty and our staff have a better understanding of how these institutions provide different types of students and what their needs are. And we're also coming up with events and other opportunities for our faculty to talk to one another and for students at those institutions to come to our campus and get a sense of life here at Queen's. So that concludes my remarks. Kevin, I don't know if you want to reserve some time for questions. I don't know how long I took, but I'm happy to answer anything that I'm able to.
You guys. Okay. Hit me with a big gun for Kevin. I have to go.
Thank you so much, Intern Provost Price, for discussing and just said we do have a few minutes of questions if you have any questions about Louisville. And I did, to let you guys know, see an outline of your remarks earlier. So I had this question in my head already, and we didn't quite get there. But I'm curious, from the Senate perspective, to what extent do you see your office consulting with the Senate on changes to non-academic department programs? So that is to say, we know academic departments have committees and chairs and elections and things like that. We also have a number of programs at the college with minors and all sorts of things. To what extent do you see the provost process making those changes in consultation with the Senate versus needing to make changes? And also to let everyone else know, this is something that the provost and your predecessor and I talked about a lot, how we can be involved in that process.
Great, thank you for the question. You know, I started off my remarks thanking you all for being here and noting that this is an opportunity to engage in shared governance. The fact that you're here indicates the health of this institution. It's not always a comfortable dialogue that we have. There's sometimes conflicts, there's sometimes places where you don't see eye to eye. I would far rather have this structure than have any other structure. This is one of the things that makes American academia special, along with tenure and along with academic freedom. Those three things, shared governance, academic freedom, make American academia distinctive and make me happy and proud to be in U.S. higher ed. So there's the spirit of shared governance, there's the letter of shared governance. To the extent possible, I want to, and I hope over the plus years that I've been in this role, I hope I've demonstrated to not just Kevin, but to all of you here, that my intention is to engage not just in the letter of shared governance, but in the spirit of shared governance. So when you introduced the process in the committee, there was a lot mentioned about curriculum. And one of the sort of basic tenets of shared governance is that faculty have ownership over the curriculum and key process around tenure and promotion. And that's important. That comes from the faculty. I was a faculty member for 10 years before I went into administration. So I've engaged with this as a faculty member and have a healthy respect for it. And then there are other areas which aren't properly part of the faculty, but in order to, I think, partner together effectively in the way that you needed for an institution of this size and complexity, even on matters that don't formally fall under the purview of a body like this, you need to be working together and dialoguing. So I don't have specific areas that you're concerned about, but you and I have met on several occasions, along with the elected faculty leadership from PMD, the PMD budget co-chairs and the PMD executive chairs, together with you, Kevin, I consider the five of you to be elected faculty representation, and I do endeavor to meet with you anytime anything comes up that would concern us as an institution. So I still hope to carry that forward. Thank you for being such a good partner. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Oh, Larissa.
This is for the anthropologist. I have a question that is, I'm not sure if
maybe partially under your purview, partially under the purview of other people in this room, but I think it applies to a lot of people, including anthropology and social sciences in general, which is what I'm representing today. And that is, we have a bunch of curricular changes that were approved by the Senate in 2023. They're not yet available for staff, and we don't know if they've been approved, and we'd like to schedule these classes in the spring. So we're just wondering what to do.
So what you're pointing to is a backlog in recording approved curricular changes, and that is entirely a workflow issue and extension issue. One of the challenges is turnover and leadership. We are working through that backlog. We're doing the best that we can. Need a full-time person.
And then schedule the courses. Can you schedule those courses in the spring if they were approved in spring of 23 or fall of
23? He is the person who really is on first with that workflow.
It's relevant now because we've been asked to have our schedules done by.
I know how frustrating this is.
Right. If they have not been approved by TMU yet, they can be offered, even if they were approved locally. On the new courses and the state changes. Now, one of the things that Kathy and I were talking about doing with Pastor Rose is finding out which courses were scheduled, were approved, and the intention was to offer them into the spring, and we're trying to pull those and fast track them. No guarantee, but that's what we're trying to do.
Okay.
There is also a tracking sheet that has been developed that the chairs have been, were sent emails and given access to view. And so everything that from the backlog that we've been able to process so far is on that tracking sheet and where it is in the process. There were also some items that were submitted before Brenda left that were sent back from CUNY, but they were sent back to a site that only Brenda, who was no longer here, had access to. So nobody knew that they were there. And so CUNY Central said, our bad, we sent them and didn't tell you, and this is where they are. So those have been, those corrections have been done, and those have been resubmitted as well. So we're kind of, we can check, if you don't have access, I'll reach out to Kat, and she can give you access. I know that all the deans and chairs were given access. Not everybody, but we also added it, I think, to Bill's Tom, correct? And I think that the co-chairs of the P&B should have access to that as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Patricia. I'd like to say, before I invited Patricia up, that it is traditional, for those of you who have been senators before, to expect the president to appear at the first meeting. We always invite the president to the first meeting in the fall. The Senate, he is in Washington, and he regrets that he can't be here, but we are planning on inviting him next month. So, Patricia, thanks for being here in this step. Okay, we'll continue then with item 3, announcements, administrative reports, and memorials. Does anyone have any announcements? Yes, please just say your name.
Hey, it's Jacqueline Becker, School of Earth and Environmental Science. I have a memorial for Professor Meredith Cox from my department, who died July 6th. He was 86. There's a fire in our department in 1967. There's a fire in was a physical geologist. He had also made headlines for women years before Hurricane Sandy, that the hurricane could devastate. He was a large professor of our students.
Thank you for that. Could I ask the body to rise for a moment in memory? Thank you. Would please could you send the text to us so that we can include that in the next time? Thank you. Are there other announcements? I have two tonight. I hope I don't screw these up. I alluded to them earlier. I believe these are clerical details, but we want to make sure we do everything properly. I mentioned that, but I agree. First is, there's a new course in political science, regional conflict and cooperation in world politics, which sounds fascinating, and we happen to get a longer number. So I would like to announce that we're going to change it to Political Science 203. I'm going to ask if anyone in this room has any objections about that number. Or corrections that 203 is actually already, I can't think of a funny political science course title. We're going to do one about fascism, populism, and authoritarianism, which would be really funny if we had this one to do. Okay, so the objections we will make that change. What I'm doing now is something that I alluded to the executive committee of the Senate. The executive committee meets beforehand with some power to act on behalf of the Senate. But anytime we do so, and this is usually over the summer, and the Senate doesn't meet, we always come back and check with the body the first time and say, hey, we did this thing, just want to make sure you're okay with it. Anyone has any objections, then it's a good vote on this one. So that's what we're doing here. The second is that the Senate's food, nutrition, and exercise science. Also, by the course numbering issue that they would like to change, implementation and effectiveness of technology in physical education would like to be changed from FNAC 712 to FNAC 718. So, that is a number, but if you have any complaints about that, I see now we will consider that course changed as well, and we'll try to get that course fraud or even whatever we can do. Excellent. Any other announcements, administrative reports, et cetera? Okay, we're going to move on then. There's no special motions. So next is item 5, committee reports. Is there a report from the undergraduate curriculum committee?
From Lord Computer Science, these the minutes of the undergraduate curriculum committee from May 9th, 2024, and ask unanimous consent.
Thank you, Ken. Are there any objections to the analyst consent? Seeing none, these 2 minutes are adopted. Thank you. Next, I don't see Stephen, but do we have a nominating committee? Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. Excuse me. Next item of business is a nominating committee report. Is there such a report?
So, we recommend Aaron Markinson, to graduate curriculum. Billy Hen, the Committee on Undergraduate Admissions and Reentry Standards, which is in the O. And William Kuzma, Innovation Science Committee.
Thank you, Terry. I just pulled this up briefly here, and I'm going to recommend you ask for unanimous consent. And this is typically these nominating committee reports go a little bit faster. So thankful to everyone who is willing to serve on a Senate committee, whether standing, special ad hoc, et cetera. There is a link on our website where you can apply for these positions, where you will come back to the ads and just a student, and we will, as I said, bring the vacancies to next year so we can fill all of these. The nominating committee is the group that reviews those and presents its report. And I just want to say a quick word about the other category, which we don't typically have. This is a replacement seat by a student on the search committee for the Dean of Arts and Humanities. So it's really important for that search to begin immediately. And this is who the nominating committee is putting forth. After unanimous consent, are there any objections to these nominees for these committees? If seeing none, the report is adopted. Thank you, Terry. There is no old business, and there is a little bit of new business, which is more elections. And to see this funny here. versus the election of faculty members to the executive committee. I'll describe that group's work in turn. Are there any nominations? We have one faculty seat available.
Anna Pagano from American National Sciences. I nominate Terry Darrell for the Executive Committee.
Thank you, Tina. So a nomination for Terry Darrell, please go to the Executive Committee. Are there any other nominations? Okay, Tina, the Secretary has cast one ballot for Terry Darrell for the Nominating Committee. Next, we'll move on to nominations to the Nominating Committee. So again, just a quick word, the Nominating Committee is the only committee that we elect from the floor here. All of these other committees will come to a report, so you will file online if you were interested in one of those. The Nominating Committee will look at those, et cetera. But because the Nominating Committee has a special power, we elect that from the floor, always. And the Executive Committee also, Dave Ramones, is also elected from the floor. So we have quite a number, and thank you. So happy to see some of the students here. There are quite a number of open student seats on the Nominating Committee, and the Nominating Committee, as with all of our other committees, is subject to the rules of quorum. And right now, we've got enough faculty to be one person shy of actually being able to do anything. Well, Dave's going to catch me on that, but I'm for dramatic purposes, I'm going to ask if there are any student nominations to the Nominating Committee. And you'll see here you have seats in all of our, what we used to call divisions, and now we call schools, as well as in large positions. So we'll share with some of those. I was asking a point of information, and the answer is yes. If you can, I would ask you to get to the microphone so we can have it on the record.
I nominate myself to the At-Large Nominating Committee.
The nominees for At-Large, thank you, Sean. Are there other nominees? The At-Large seat is full, but if there are any other, major that identifies in any of these, I don't know if they identify, but. For the beginning of other schools. So you have a school, the School of Social Sciences would be the majors that are in the social sciences. So business would be considered as one. I'm not sure what the new status of the school of business will be in terms of these particular questions, but we haven't rewritten a bylaw system for that yet. So, you nominated yourself for the at-large position. If one was a business major, et cetera, you could nominate for that would be appropriate to be under social sciences.
Aaron Bohm, I nominate myself for the social sciences.
Thank you, Aaron. Excellent. Okay, so we have a nomination for at-large and the social sciences. Anyone from Arts and Humanities, Education, and Natural Sciences, and other nominations for students? Seeing none, the Secretary will pass the votes for Aaron and Sean for those positions. These are under new business, but guess what you're going to see in a month? These seats are under old business. So I implore you, if you feel you're unable to run for one of these seats, check out with your colleagues. The Nominating Committee has a great responsibility, but what's cool about it, I'm on it. What's really cool about it is that it's not super duper onerous. So it's a great way to get involved and see how we make decisions and set these committees. I'm sorry, there's a question. Would you please put a microphone just again for accessibility and so we can keep records?
I nominate myself for the Math and Natural Sciences part of the Nomination Committee.
Excellent, thank you so much. Could you please state your name?
Louis Cabell.
Louis Cabell. Louis, thank you. And if Louis and I would if you could come down and if we get the spelling of your last name correctly, in case that doesn't happen. Okay, so we do have an additional nomination. So we have three. Any other nominations for emphasis for math and natural science? If you could get to do both. This one could use the cards today. Seeing none. We'll consider the student nominations closed, and we're still looking for Arts and Humanities and Education. I'll ask you about that next month. I'm going to take the liberty of making a motion to adjourn. So thank you so much for being here today. With you, best of luck as you commence your semester. We'll see you in October. Good to see you. Okay, thank you. I'm going to go to the next one.